The Red Eye Radio podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. Welcome and good morning. Thanks so much for being here. Just interesting here, just going through a bunch of different stories. And February 25th, PolitiFact flagged Senator Rick Scott of Florida as false for writing in an Orlando Sentinel op-ed that the Green New Deal has a goal of ending air travel. The resolution makes no mention of ending air travel. Instead, it calls for overhauling transportation systems, which includes investments in high-speed rail. Scott seized on the messaging document from the Democrats. It mentioned perhaps in jest getting rid of cows and airplanes. It never said in jest. We read the fact sheet.
Why would they be joking about that?
That's the whole point. And reading her news special, it's like, where'd they get the, we rate the statement false. Well, she mentioned it.
Right.
And I went and went back and actually got the publication that said, here it is. Let me get to it precisely.
Hmm.
We set a goal to get net zero rather than zero emissions in 10 years because we aren't sure that we'll be able to fully get rid of the passing gas cows and airplanes that fast, but we think we can ramp up renewable manufacturing and power production, blankety, blankety, blank. She mentioned the airplanes, and so you say, well, if you're not serious, don't put it in the fact sheet.
Right.
Now it's up to Republicans and conservatives to figure out in a fact sheet for a piece of legislation what is a joke and what is not a joke.
Well, first it was zero, and then it was, oh, net zero.
Well, but there's a serious point there, a serious point of going from, as we said, you cannot get to, initially, you can't get to zero carbon emissions. It's impossible. It's an impossibility. So then you change it to net zero emissions, which we said, okay, that means you're going to fudge the numbers.
Right.
And their point was, no, we're not fudging the numbers. Our point is we can't get rid of everything fast enough, so we need to get to net zero emissions because we can't get rid of airplanes and cows. Can't get rid of cows, can't get rid of airplanes.
And that's again, the play by Ocasio-Cortez over and over again. Well, you guys said this, and I didn't really mean that.
Man, oh, man, telling you.
You have to be very clear about what you mean, about what you're trying to do. Blame it on somebody else for something you said. Over and over again. Why? Because they can't have the debate. You can't have a serious discussion.
I just shake my head. No, you guys are wrong. I said it, but I didn't mean it.
Right.
It was a joke. It wasn't done in the joke context.
No. No, it was not. You're either serious about that. Where's your sense of urgency if you're joking? She's the one that talked about the sense of urgency.
Right. So I just saw that and I just had to mention it. I was going through a few things but I was actually going through the polling and there was a side story on that and I went, "Oh, what's this? How could Scott be wrong about the air travel? We read that." And then I read PolitiFact. Well, no, obviously in jest. It wasn't obviously,
what do you mean,
in
obviously
jest.
Obviously in jest. Forget the cows thing. What's funny about getting rid of air travel? That was the whole point. In order for you to even come close to even net zero emissions, there's no way you can keep planes in the sky.
No, you can't. No, you can't. No.
Because now we're talking about, and if they're not serious, okay, great. So now you're talking about what? Net zero emissions. All right, that means we're going to start hearing things about carbon credits again.
Yeah, exactly.
See, if we just have the companies pay more, if they just pay this massive taxation, then we can zero out the emissions. Well, who decides that? We do. A political party.
Well, if I can't tell what part of it's a joke, I'm going to take it all as a joke.
Yes.
Unless you tell me what parts are a joke and what parts are not a joke in a fact sheet for your piece of legislation, then as far as I'm concerned, it's a complete joke. Oh, wait a minute. That was my opinion before that. Oh, never mind. I want to get back to the poll that we talked about before. That only 25% of respondents ranked socialist as a desirable trait for a candidate. Another, one of the things I left out from that poll, or that was done, only 37% said someone over 75 was desirable. I have a feeling close to that 37% were people close to 75.
I'm guessing.
So we don't want the old folks. And remember, Trump is only 72. Trump won't be 75.
What about Bernie? Biden?
Biden right now is 76. Sanders is 77. I don't know when their birthdays are, but close to 79 and 78 at that point.
Yeah. Yeah,
I can't imagine.
Well, but
imagine Rand.
But who has the young audience right now on the left? Bernie.
He did in the last election. I don't know if anybody, you know, when Skater Bob comes out, I don't know if he's going to get it. I mean, I don't know who's. We saw the bread lines waiting to see Bernie talk the other day over the weekend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I saw some when he was speaking. A few days ago, the people that were flanked behind him, it's always a friendly audience, of course.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if any of those people were even old enough to vote yet. It was a young crowd. And so, I think it gets down to the promise of the freebies. And for him, it's been primarily what?
College.
Yep. Free college.
Right. He's the one that took what came out of Occupy Wall Street.
Yes.
Which is the only thing that's stuck that came out of Occupy Wall Street.
Mm-hmm.
Even only patronize the local banks. Oh, well, wait a minute. What did that piece of legislation do? What did Dodd-Frank do? Mm. Oh, it helped consolidate the banks into bigger banks and got rid of the smaller banks. Remember we said that during Occupy Wall Street? We're mm-hmm. like, remember we had the Antifa people? Was not Antifa. What was it?
Occupy
Wall Street.
Portland,
okay.
I think it was.
Right, Antifa didn't. It wasn't Antifa. We haven't talked to them. I don't think they talk on the phone.
No.
Yeah, we had the Occupy people on, and they said, well, and we're going to patronize the smaller banks. It's like, well, excuse me, you support the Democrats, right? You know, Dodd-Frank does the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to see consolidate. It's going to destroy the smaller bank.
And remember, the Occupy people ended up getting their account. They had to open an account at a major bank, going, well, we're looking for a small bank to work with.
Right. And so that fell apart because that was really a big part, first part of it. And then really the only thing that stuck with it is that banks need, this is before we went to the full government, you know, loan program.
Mm-hmm.
It was the banks are responsible for the colleges promising a great job to the students and not delivering with the degree that they got. Therefore, the banks should forgive the loans yeah. because of the false promises of the colleges. That was the only kind of logic that came out. Bernie Sanders took that and ran with that when he ran for 2016, stating that if you're in college, the billionaires owe you something. It wasn't the banks. The billionaires somehow ripped you off.
Yes.
He just moved it to somebody else.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, you're right. Maybe it's the old people saying, I'm 75. What the hell are you running for president for?
Exactly. I want somebody younger. I do believe it's interesting because you're seeing Bernie surge in some of the Democrat polls.
Yes.
And because we don't know. We have no idea which way it's going. If Biden announces and he starts doing the appearances and everything else, and while he has been speaking lately, it's not official. But if he announces, where does it go? Where does the party go?
What about Cuomo? You saw that story, right?
So I'm really hoping Governor Cuomo gets in. Go ahead, please. Because you know what's interesting is the bigger the pool, especially of people we already know, getting in on the left between now and, you know, next year, the greater opportunity it has for the Republicans to position against them. With Cuomo, late-term abortions. That's just the latest. But then from the left, from his own side, and you made the point during one of our breaks earlier, well, from the left, it's going to be, you're still trying to get Big Bad Amazon to move HQ2 into New York City. Well, sorry.
You can't be
pro-business.
Can you be a pro-Amazon Democrat nominee for president?
Well, think about what Cynthia Nixon did. And we gave her credit when she was running against him. We gave her credit. We knew, you know, she wasn't going to win. But in the debates, she positioned some things against him, again, from... She's further left, I guess further left. I have no idea. I don't try and qualify left as left. But she was asking questions of him. Well, of course, that's going to be the case on the debate stage next year if he's to get into the 2020 race. Because it goes beyond, you know, being governor. Of course, it's going to be about the policies you're going to support as president. And are you big business? You sound just like Trump. And I guarantee you that that's going to be said. If he ends up on a debate stage on the left, somebody's going to say that. Well, you sound just like the guy we have now. For that one, that just that one reason.
Okay, some interesting polls coming up we'll cover here next.
All right.
Just looking at some really interesting polls.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just fun to talk about. I mean, it's...
Right.
I'm thinking to myself, why am I even reading these polls? It's March.
Well, and it'll change. It's early March.
It'll change by mid-March. I know. We're a year and really a year and 8 months out.
Yeah.
All right. A year and 8 months out. And I'm looking at polls.
Yeah.
But it's still because the thing is interesting. I'm looking at the ones where they put Schultz in at different states. Mm-hmm. If you put Schultz in, how that changes the makeup of who people would
and
vote for.
So
right
far,
now.
We haven't heard of him backing down from the idea of running.
No. We'll tell you about that all coming up. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Cold weather can affect your batteries more than any other component on the vehicle. Pay attention to these maintenance tips that may help assure your batteries are equipped to roll through the rest of winter. A fully charged battery is one of the best defenses against cold weather. Have your batteries tested before your next trip to ensure they're able to handle cold early morning starts and in order to maximize their lifespan. Another tip is to make sure your batteries are clean. Dirty batteries can discharge at a faster rate when the truck is idle. Dirt can also promote corrosion on terminals and connections, a problem that will only worsen in cold weather. Stop in to a TA truck service near you to have your batteries charged and inspected for harmful debris today.
This maintenance tip is a service of TA Truck Service Road Squad. If you break down, we show up. Call 800-924-SHOP.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. So just looking at some of the polls here. Okay, this was a... I just happened to say, okay, let me just look at the polls, which is something I should never do because then I become obsessed with them. And it's a year and 8 months out. But I obsess just to wonder what's in people's minds as far out. This was the Emerson poll done in South Carolina. All right. The Democratic presidential primary, Biden has 37%, Sanders 21%, Harris 9%, Booker 6%, Warren 5%, O'Rourke 5%. All right. Now, if the election were held today,
yeah, it would be illegal.
But Trump would beat Biden 52-48.
Right.
Would beat Sanders 54-46. Would beat Harris, Kamala Harris, 56-44. 12. Would beat Warren by 8. Would beat Booker by 8. Would beat Skater Bob by 12.
Hmm.
Now, if Howard Schultz, you know, you put him in the mix. This is the Emerson poll for South Carolina. Trump, 51, Sanders, 42, Schultz, 7. Schultz actually would pull, let me see, 4 from Warren and, or excuse me, 4 from, Schultz would actually pull 4 from Sanders and 3 from Trump.
Hmm.
Wow, that's interesting. And if you ran against Warren, it would be Trump 53, Warren 41, Schultz 7. Schultz stays at a 7 no matter what. Now, that's South Carolina. I thought it was interesting. So that's all. That's...
So if the polls start trending that shows Schultz taking more from Trump, you know you're going to have more and more liberals going, well, he has every right to run as an independent. Of course, right away they were saying no because you'll get Trump elected. Now, ultimately, I think he would be the spoiler for the Democrats.
Now look at New Hampshire.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this was taken a couple of weeks ago, though.
Right.
Emerson again. Trump versus Biden in New Hampshire. Biden 55, Trump 45. Sanders 55, Trump 45. Harris 52, Trump 48, just 4. Warren 52, Trump 48, just 4. Booker wins 51-49. If Schultz is in the mix, it's Sanders 48, Trump 42, Schultz 10. If it's Elizabeth Warren in the mix, Trump 45, Warren 44, Schultz 12.
Mm-hmm.
Trump wins if it's Warren in New Hampshire and Schultz is in. Mm. So Schultz takes it from Warren.
Right.
So it seems to me that there's a ton of independents who view differently a Biden and a Sanders than they do any of the other candidates. Any of the new candidates seem to get less votes.
Right.
Less support.
And I think we've seen that in other polls. So far, that's the trend. Now, again, it's early March.
Oh, I know.
But,
exactly.
But you would think, though, because Kamala Harris is not new to the public eye. She's... I think very, very active and was had a high profile during the whole Kavanaugh thing. She certainly has been ushered in by the media with a great deal of smiling faces, as we talked about recently, the week she announced. You would think right then and there that she would have the advantage, and she just might ultimately. But you still have to discount the power of or the influence of Bernie and Biden if he decides to run. And that's going to be fascinating to watch to see how that all shapes up. Because Harris is more on the side of the activist. And so when you talk about that, you're talking about having that real communication with the young people. That real bond with the young people. Well, right now, Bernie's got that.
Making overnight radio great again. Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Carney. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Welcome and good morning.
Coming up in just a few minutes, we're going to get with Kaylee Hartung. She is our Westwood One news correspondent that is there on the ground in Opelika, Alabama. She's covering the deadly tornadoes that came through that town, that community, and causing the death of 23 individuals, according to reports there in that area in southeast Alabama. We're going to get with her here in just a few minutes, about 15 minutes or so.
Over the weekend, you know, since we were just talking about the polling on socialism, got into just some great conversations. That's what happens when you're not doing anything for 5 days because you're laying in bed. You're on the phone going, So I got into it, and somebody said, yeah, but there's a difference between Democrat socialism. So, well, maybe there initially, there are different nuances, but socialism in itself is government controlling more of the capital and then slowly controlling more of the means of production.
And in this case, you would be voting for someone to do that.
Well, not only voting, but you're still voting for people to confiscate your property.
Right. That's
for people,
my point.
For a group of people to. So you're moving away. You may call it Democrat socialism, but from the point where you say that the government, that you believe that the government should be in control of the means of production, which means capital. Mm-hmm. It can mean capital, then it can mean actually taking over the companies, which then you get into, you know, communism and everything else. But it's the thought process behind it. Once you're thinking that everything is communal, that what you earn is not yours, it's not yours, it's mine. There comes to a point where you've made too much. Who said that? There comes to a point where you've made too much. Well, who makes that decision? And then how much do you take? And when you take it, why is it moral to do that? And when it comes to a person's individuality and individual rights, what rights do they actually have? Do they have a right to their own work and their own effort? Do they have a right? And how much of a right do they have to it? Now, these are questions that conveniently are avoided by the true socialist, because what they're talking about is the good that we can do with your wealth that you can't do with it, that we can do better. One thing, as we mentioned this on Friday when we got into the finances of it, is the belief that by many many socialists, you know, they believe that, or they attempt, I don't think they believe it because they're not, nobody's really that stupid, but they attempt to promote to other people who they believe are really stupid that people that are rich just take that money and they become hedonistic with it, and they keep it for themselves, and they embrace it, and they're I'm trying to think of the Two and a Half Men. Oh, I don't even know what episode it is where Alan is on the bed, almost naked, throwing the money up into the air and just embracing it completely. And as we know that, well, I don't know, maybe you might do that once when you got all the money. I don't know. when you win the lottery that day. But as we all know, no, that's not the case. Money in the private sector is invested. The vast majority of wealth of billionaires, they don't see. Very little of their wealth actually goes in to what, you know, they actually have. But they have a $10 million house and a $20 million yacht. Doesn't matter. They're worth $40 billion. That's nothing. The majority of their money is in what? It's in stock. It's being invested. That's the reason that hundreds of thousands of other people have great paying jobs, and they're paying taxes also. That's why.
Well, the building and furnishing and maintenance, right, of a $40 million mansion isn't small either.
Well, remember the study that was done on, because this is when the debate was, well, we need to do things for small business but not large business. Remember that whole thing? We go through that. That periodically comes up. We should help small business. And we brought out the study that showed that the average multi-billion-dollar business, you know, multi-billion-dollar business does business. Their subcontractors are between 4,000 and 6,000 small and very small businesses. Everything's intertwined. It isn't one or the other. And so if you're going to promote, as you and I have talked about, when you're going to promote socialism, it's built on a lie, because socialism itself is an individual telling you how the economic system should be and what the moral economic system is. Capitalism actually isn't that. Capitalism is what people do without a book.
Yeah.
It's what they do voluntarily. Now, the only thing that may come into organized thought that could be in a book is contract law, which then exists in a capitalist system so people can make agreements between each other. So that might be written down. But those are both parties agreeing voluntarily to those rules and regulations. It's not somebody else telling you what you must do because we think it's moral. It's simply the rules and regulations to govern or be the referee between two people who voluntarily agree to both portions of a contract. It's the government's role then to what? Enforce that contract, which both went into voluntarily. And if one wants to exit it early, that's where the government gets involved in it. But the whole concept is built on what? Voluntarily doing something. So I just thought it was interesting because I got into that little debate. You know, well, democratic socialism is much better. It's not.
Well, no, you have the same result.
It may be the early stages of socialism, but it's all headed to a particular area. Because I heard that again this weekend. Well, the problem is it's the wrong people that have run the socialist societies. Right. If the correct people do it, it would run much better if we only did it right.
Yeah. Well, it's like you're running a fast food chain. We do socialism right. Have it our way. And that's because what? Because they can't sell true socialism. They're trying to repackage it over and over again.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. You still get to the same point. It's the same effect. It's the same dynamics of an economy or control of an economy by a government.
You have to confiscate a lot more of somebody else's private property in order to accomplish your goal. That's the difference.
Yes, exactly.
And you have to take over a lot more of it, and sometimes all of it.
Yeah.
And so, again, you know, as we get into this talk, because this has been the whole thing, you know, especially the last couple of weeks, we really don't live in a socialist society. We don't have a lot of socialists. We have a lot of free stuffers, is what we have. We got a ton of free stuffers. I want free stuff. You pointed out when Obamacare came along, and we'll never forget that Democrat couple that in Northern California that said, we were completely and totally behind it. We really were. I mean, we embrace Obamacare. When the president promoted it, we were right on board. We didn't know we were going to have to pay for it.
Right. Yeah.
I'm in it as long as it doesn't affect me. I love a socialist program. As long as it doesn't affect me negatively, we're a bunch of free stuffers. As long as it doesn't affect us, yeah, give away the free stuff,
right,
if I can be part of it. Now, socialism is sold that way to people. It doesn't make the people that want it actually socialist, because we in this country, if we can be the victim in a socialist system, we love it. If we're the oppressor, we don't want it. And as we've seen, you can go very quickly from victim to oppressor in a socialist system. Or a more liberal system. Martina Navratilova, as we announced, she's the oppressor, one of the oppressors. And so, you know, that's why there's great hope, is because Americans don't want to be told what to do. We want free stuff. We want a government that is not intrusive, but just takes care of us. We believe, and that's where the biggest delusion of Americans comes in, is we believe we can have one without the other.
And it you know, it's also the difference between you mentioned the oppressor and the victim, but it's also the recipient and the payer. Because now that I'm going to have to pay for it, now that I'm more successful in life, oh, wait a minute, I don't want you taking more of my money.
Nobody in America wants to be the payer in the socialist system.
Right. Warren Buffett says he does, but only if you force him to by law. He can give more to the government. Oh, no, I wouldn't want to do that. You need to compel me to do that by law.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. I'm Gary McNamara along with Eric Harley.
Deadly tornadoes in Alabama Sunday evening and also in Alabama this morning. Westwood One news correspondent Kaylee Hartung. She is in Opelika, Alabama. Good morning, Kaylee.
Hi, Kaylee.
Good morning, guys.
What do we know so far about the number of people who died as a result of these tornadoes and also some of the other damage that's being reported?
Now, right now, the death toll stands at 23 people, and that includes children. That number coming just out of Lee County, Alabama, which is where I am right now, just south of Opelika. Search and rescue crews have been working overnight, continuing to pull bodies from the rubble. I think I went to bed around 10:30 last night after we got into town, and at that time, the death toll was at 14. And by the time I got up to start reporting this morning, we'd seen that number rise. When it comes to the devastation caused, it's still being assessed. I mean, right now, I'm about a quarter mile from what's sort of thought of as ground zero of this tornado's devastation, and police won't let us get any closer because, again, these search and rescue operations, to our knowledge, are continuing.
Yeah, because it's dark out, Kaylee, any idea how large of an area this is? I read one story that they believe that it could have been a half mile wide, at least.
That's right. That's what the National Weather Service is saying. The National Weather Service from Birmingham sending three teams down today to, again, further assess that damage. But, yes, at some areas up to a half mile wide, which is just terrifying to think about. And officials say that one tornado appears to have traveled for several miles on the ground in this community. I mean, that's destroying everything in its path.
What do we know about the hospitals and maybe the number of people that may be hospitalized? This isn't a large area. Where were those injured taken? And what's the capacity of those hospitals?
You know, it's a very good question, and truthfully, I can't run down every hospital in the area and give you those sort of capacity numbers. But this is a rural area where the tornadoes hit. And I should mention, we're not just talking about one tornado. There were actually two tornadoes that touched down within an hour of each other in Lee County, just adding to the surprise factor here and the extent of the devastation. But, you know, don't forget, we're very near Auburn, Alabama, which is the largest city in Alabama, especially when you add the university population, a hospital there. It doesn't take all that much longer to get to Birmingham. So you certainly have resources, despite the fact that this small community itself is in a rural area.
Any word of the Red Cross or any other organization being on the ground there and helping some of those displaced residents?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. There are a couple of shelters set up in the area that are ready to receive people with the Red Cross's help. There have been setups at churches nearby for families to congregate. And that's what authorities are telling people. Check in with your loved ones if you were in this area. There are still people unaccounted for that, as we've seen in so many natural disasters before, so long as people can communicate with their own families and sort of bring down that level of stress for some of them as they're looking for their loved ones, it can help authorities make sure that they're looking for the right people that could be unaccounted for. So this is a community that people say is small. Folks know each other. They will come together. They will support one another. But there are those outside organizations coming in here to make sure that they have the support that they need. But this is an all-hands-on-deck kind of situation for all authorities here. We expect a news conference here today at 1 o'clock local at Central Time. and we hope to learn more from authorities then.
Kaylee, I don't believe the authorities have given out the number of injured, have they? Have you heard any
number? They have not given out the number injured. I know of one hospital that said they had more than 40 people who had come in, and that was yesterday at maybe 10 p.m. And they knew that other people were going to other hospitals as well. So, you know, again, let's remember, this is a rural area. We're not talking about a densely populated right. area. Given that the lead time was so little for this area, I can't even imagine what it must have been like to be in that situation. Sure. Yesterday, this area was under a tornado watch. Mm. They knew right. severe weather could be threatening them, but yeah. get this, it was 1:58 when the first tornado warning was issued. Mm. The first reports of damage came in at 2:03.
Wow.
Wow. Wow.
Kaylee, thank
West
you so
one,
much.
Kaylee Hartung there in Alabama. Thank you, Kaylee.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Thanks so much for being here this morning. In the news today, at least 23 are dead, many more injured after two large tornadoes hit in Lee County, Alabama yesterday. Fatalities, in all likelihood, will rise, is what we're being told by authorities. Here is Lee County Sheriff Jay Jones.
There are some juveniles involved in the fatality situation, adults as well. This is the most significant damage from a storm that I've seen in Lee County in many, many years. I'm sure it would match up with what we've seen in some of the other areas in Alabama in the last few years. This is not an urban area. It is a rural area. All these people that have lost their loved ones, of course, so we pray for these families. They're going to have a tough time ahead. The others who have lost everything they have and are homeless at this point, literally, we're certainly going to do everything we can to get the resources to them to help them.
Eric, it's a terrible situation. As we've been told, John Trott was telling us earlier, a half mile wide, one of the tornadoes at least a half right. mile wide, and at least went, they believe, like 5 or 6 miles, stayed on the ground. 23 killed. We don't know how many injured. We heard one hospital, maybe 40, had shown up for treatment at one hospital. But we're talking about a very rural area. This wasn't a suburban area or any type of urban area where this hit, not densely populated, and still just an incredible death toll. And we still don't know, because this was a late afternoon tornado, and so searchers really don't know what the debris field at this moment is going to look like.
Into the evening, they were using, at one point, they were using drones with heat-seeking capabilities that allowed them, or they were, it was done in hopes that they would find other individuals among the debris that were still alive and needed help. We don't know to what extent they carried that activity on throughout the night. There were over 150 first responders, that were in this location, helping on Sunday evening. There was a press conference, later today, about 1 p.m. It is scheduled. We may get some more information before then, but, you will have, individuals, the authorities, moving in this morning, of course, to continue the search for survivors and then assess that damage there. As we were talking with Westwood One correspondent Kaylee Hartung, who is there in the Auburn-Opelika area, she was reporting to us that the first report, the warning hit just a couple of minutes before 2 p.m., and then just a couple of minutes later you had reports of the first damage coming in. And that's how quickly it happens. Growing up in Tornado Alley. You learn, you grow up with the very real fact that, especially during storm season, if there is a tornado watch, which they did have in place for this area, that you you stay tuned to the radio and TV to make sure that you can heed all of those warnings that come along. If a watch is in place, your eyes and ears are open, because it happens so quickly. Not just 2 years ago, I was at my parents' house, and they lived next to this open field, and there was a tornado warning that came in, and it went by that open field. It wasn't very far from the house. We took shelter, and we came out, and then we walked outside thinking that that had passed us. Another funnel cloud was right above our heads, and as sure as we looked up, and as soon as it happened, the sirens went off again, and they issued another tornado warning. The point being is that it happens very, very quickly, where these funnel clouds can touch the ground and become tornadoes, and it gives people very little time to react and to get to shelter. As Kaylee was telling us, the warning happened, and just a few minutes later, damage reports already coming in.
Within 5 minutes,
And so, it is always the case with the tornado. It's going to happen very, very quickly. And this one is especially deadly. It will go down as one of the deadliest tornadoes in U.S. history. So our thoughts and prayers with those there in Alabama this morning that are coping with all of the devastation there. As the sun rises again, the authorities will go in to assess that damage. But also from the National Weather Service, they will go in and they will determine how big this tornado was, how powerful it was, and they'll measure that by the damage that was done.
Yeah, I've only had that surreal experience once, and it was roughly 2 years ago. And it was one of those times 2 years ago where we had just a number of tornadoes around, the area. Nothing massive, but there were tornadoes around, and they saw a tornado about 20 miles south of me. And it just, kept coming closer and closer. But 20 miles out, you're like, but they were following it. They knew where it was. They could see the little bend, and it kept moving up. And then they did the projection of it, which was about, 3 miles to the east or west of me it was going to go. And so it's like, it's okay. And they said, well, it's turning, it might be turning just a little bit. We're not sure, but make sure you take cover. And at that point, it was about 3 or 4 miles from me. So I decided I'm going to go out my back door, because with the city lights, you might be able to see the funnel cloud even from the distance that I was at, because you can see quite a ways from where I am. So I go outside. I'm out there for about 5 minutes. And the winds, wind's blowing like crazy. And then it completely stopped. Dead. I mean, there was nothing. It went within a matter of a second and a half to 40-50 mile an hour winds to nothing. And I went, oh no. I'll never forget the only time ever there I went, because at the moment you go, what do I do? And you take the precaution. I remember just running into the house, slamming the door.
Right.
I remember picking up the cat, running in. My bathroom is right in the center of the house. Jumping in the bathtub, and I have a little mattress for a cot, not a big mattress. It threw it over the top of us, and we sat there for about 5 minutes. Then you could hear the wind blowing again, and it was like, must be gone. And apparently what happened, it went about a mile and a half from me, but it lifted up into the air. It went right over our subdivision and then landed at, came down about 10 miles further up north and hit some places there. It wasn't a very powerful one. I'm telling you, when you go through that, and that's the thing. In this case, and it seemed like by the time they had the warning, it was on the, a lot of times a warning, it's on the ground, though, to begin with.
Yes,
but most of the time, it's, especially when you live in an area like we do, but even the meteorologist here, even in, I know an area like North Dallas, I'm assuming it's the same thing, Birmingham, Auburn, whatever, down in Alabama, that even if it's a rural one, they got the meteorologists on it, and they can see those little bows. They know most of the time when there's a tornado, and the spotting's really pretty good.
Yeah,
But once it hits the ground, you know, you can be in that instance where, okay, they can track some. So if you're right there, but where that thing comes out of the sky and hits at that point, by the time the meteorologist can look at it, that could be 7-8 minutes later, and it's already done the damage.
I think of the all the years, you know, the 3.5 decades of doing radio, and I started in Tornado Alley, and you learn that in the spring you pay attention. And, of course, for what we do, we need to be fully aware and keep constant contact with spotters and the National Weather Service and be aware. That's part of our job. But when you learn everything that goes into it, the spotters that are out there, and then the technology that has advanced in those 35 years just since I've been doing it, you understand that they can give you, at least they can say conditions are favorable here, that there is a greater risk, a slight risk, a moderate risk, whatever that might be. And in Tornado Alley, you take that very seriously. My cousin lived through, and his siblings, my other cousins and aunt and uncle, lived through the April 10th tornado in Wichita Falls, Texas, 1979. They were in a car, and that tornado picked up their car and dropped it several times. And they all walked away. My aunt had some fairly serious injuries, and still today, very visible scars. But he wrote about that recently. It was a couple of years ago, and we're coming up on the 40th anniversary of that. But he wrote about it in a way that I had not even talked to him about. I had not heard him describe that, and he wrote about it on Facebook about what he went through as a child. He was young. He's younger than me, and so he would have been at that point, I think, 11 years old, 10 or 11 years old. And he remembered it vividly and described it vividly, and it is...
That was the F5, right?
Yeah, that was it was an F5, and it just... This thing was nearly a mile wide, because it was three tornadoes that came together, if memory serves correctly. And the massive footprint of that storm, and there's a couple of pictures out there that put it into perspective, that show you this, it is just mind-boggling. It's just mind-numbing to think of that kind of power, where you have very little power over that storm. The only thing you can do is do what other friends and colleagues and family members did, and that's get to shelter. But they were in a car at that time and lived through it, and others didn't. I've had friends that survived the Joplin tornado from several years ago, describing it as well. So our thoughts and prayers.
Well, remember the one in 97, Gerald, Texas.
Oh yeah,
the F5.
I actually remember
that subdivision. I mean, it was
in that storm. We were actually in San Antonio vacationing, and the storm that came through that spawned those tornadoes. We were at a hotel, and we had been out to the water park all day. And I looked in the distance, and I said to my wife, that's not good. We got to go. So I told the kids, I said, let's go back. We'll get some pizza. We got to go back to the hotel, get to a safe place. And we went back, and the winds that came through, and we didn't even, in the San Antonio area, we didn't have the tornadoes, but it was shaking the cars in the parking lot, all of the car alarms going off, and the rain that was coming down. And then, of course, right about that time, we were getting news of the reports of the Gerald tornado. We came through that area the morning after, and the town was just gone. It was just
gone. I'll never forget it. I was living in Oregon, but at the time, I still remember it. I mean, the Double Creek Estates, the subdivision.
Yeah, just
completely
just gone.
30-something homes just wiped out.
Just gone.
27 people killed. Nothing. I'll just never forget the television. Probably some of the scenes we'll see later on this morning. This was an F3, but that was an F5. 261-mile-an-hour-plus winds, mm-hmm. and it was just concrete slabs. That was it.
Yeah.
Nothing else.
Right.
No,
it teared up
not, not bolts. Not
it tore up parts of the road.
Yeah. Oh, I remember that. Yes.
I mean, yep, it yep. was, yeah, and that kind of power. I mean, you know, the especially those in the scientific community look to learn something from it. It's not just learning so that we can learn. It's learning so that they can build the tools down the road to give us a better warning. And that's what that comes down to, is that over the years and in my time and growing up and living most of my life in Tornado Alley, that is what you hope for. And I've seen it happen. I know that today that the people that are out there, and I give kudos to all those meteorologists out there, a number of them that I have followed and watched and listened to on the radio over the years, and have done so much in terms of a service for their community in being able to provide that information. That's what it's all about. You're trying to give people as much of a warning as possible, and also to convey to them the power of a storm like this. And if you seek shelter and nothing happens, that's a good day. If you seek shelter and that shelter saves your life, we don't need to say any more than that. And that's what this is all about. Our thoughts and prayers are with those
everybody
affected by this storm. And
yep.
we'll have more information, I'm sure, as the sun comes up here in a few hours there in Alabama and they further assess this damage.
866-90-RED-EYE.
What a difference a year makes, especially in the context of year-round E15 blended fuels. According to Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue, recalling his first visit to Commodity Classic in 2018.
There was a concern about E15. Is this administration going to do what it said it was going to do regarding E15 year-round sales?
The secretary, speaking at this year's Commodity Classic in Orlando Friday, noted progress by the Environmental Protection Agency to have an E15 final rule in place before June 1st, the unofficial start of the summer driving season, pushed by recently confirmed EPA Administrator Andrew Wheeler after some concerns arose about meeting that deadline.
While he told me a couple of weeks ago, because of the shutdown, they didn't think they would get the rule over E15 year-round out before driving season. He figured out how to get the rule done by June the 1st for E15 year-round, and he was confirmed yesterday.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
The USDA report is sponsored by Cenex Roadmaster XL Premium Highway Diesel Fuel and Shell Rotella.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Well, really, the big story for this Monday politically will be the fact that the Democrats want to talk to at least 60 different people in the Trump administration, subpoena documents, and everything else. For what? They can tell you. Obstruction of justice in general. Is there any crime that they suspect has been committed? Any specific crime? No, they can't tell you. So why are they doing that?
Right. What's the point?
We'll talk more about that coming up here following the bottom of the hour. And I think people probably know to keep the suspicion up as long as possible.
Right. Because the Mueller thing's clearly going away. They clearly don't think anything's going to come of that.
Apparently they don't. No,
and
because they're not waiting for it.
You got to build something new. But, you know, what's interesting is, you know, if they're going after the president's finances, imagine that they had done that first and there was no Mueller thing and they decided to do that first. They may have built some credibility with people in the middle, independents, as to whether or not there was something there. I think it falls short because it looks like another attempt to build something on nothing. We've always said the president's finances, probably his Achilles heel, because there are so many tentacles and business relationships and deals that were done over the years, they've got a million things to choose from. But I think they're going to look like, well, sore losers. And again, it's going to amount to be nothing. Here's your forecast.
A severe tornado outbreak in the south yesterday. Many people are still missing. There are at least 22 reported killed. and dozens badly hurt after flying debris and ripped-off roofs were reported in portions of the South, Alabama, and Georgia, the primary states, although we have reports of touchdowns in Florida as well. Beauregard, Alabama, just south of I-85 to the east and slightly north of Montgomery along I-85. The track of tornado touchdowns and the outbreak then went to the north and east, just north of Columbus, Georgia. There were literally thousands of lightning strikes associated with the storm. There are thousands of people without power this morning. If you're driving through the region, there is debris scattered across state roads and the potential for some road closures. There's your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
If you don't like what they're saying, then you can't handle the truth. Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. So it really built up over the weekend. The Cohen hearing sort of disappeared, and all of a sudden you had Mark Warner, you had Gerald Nadler, you had Adam Schiff, all out there saying we're going after Trump. We believe that he colluded with the Russians. Now we want to look at the Russians and all the financial stuff out there. It's really interesting because I want to play this comment, this audio cut from Face the Nation on CBS and their justice correspondent, Paula Reid, after all the discussion that was going on yesterday about going after Trump again and what they believe they have on Trump. Here it is.
We heard from Adam Schiff, the chairman of House Intelligence, this allegation of money laundering on behalf of Russia through the Trump Organization, but he admitted he had no proof of that thus far.
That's a pretty big bomb to lob without any corroboration. I also take issue with his claim that he has evidence of collusion. He seemed to be conflating contact with collusion. He says what happened at Trump Tower was collusion. He's pointing to emails. Mm-hmm. Nothing was exchanged there. Same with the meeting that Paul Manafort had with Konstantin Kilimnik, exchanging polling data. We know there was contact. We know that. But we don't know what they did with that polling data. So we certainly have evidence of contact, but a criminal conspiracy. So far, there has not been sufficient proof for anyone to be charged in that.
And so what we're getting to the point is if you're in, because think about this, any president who runs in the future, any contact you have with the foreign country, mm-hmm. with anybody in a foreign country, mm-hmm. automatically, if you're running for president now or you become president, the opposition now is going to subpoena anything that you've done in your past with anything that you've ever done with your past with the foreign country, because there might be a possibility that you did something. Remember, it's been over 2.5 years that Trump colluded with the Russians to hack the election. There's no evidence of that. In fact, the evidence is that the opposition party did it. The opposition party is the one that colluded with the Russians in order not to hack the election, but to change the outcome of the election. And when they couldn't do that, they decided to try to delegitimize a legitimate 2016 election by coming up with the allegation that the president did collude, going and using and getting false information from the Russians to not only attempt to prove that by throwing those allegations out and using the discredited dossier to do that, and then using that dossier in order to get a FISA warrant to spy on members of the Trump campaign and therefore try to get to Trump. And so when you look at it, that's much worse than anything that they've even alleged, even in general, that Trump did. I really think right now when you saw after what happened with Cohen, I think they have sort of dismissed him, even though they're going to bring him back again. I think that his credibility is destroyed. It'll be interesting to see what the attorney general now does with the criminal referral, mm-hmm. because then that's dead. If he comes mm-hmm. back and says, oh, we're going to charge him with something else, that portion's done, which is why I think they've gone now to the next point. We're going after collusion. We're going to go after 60 of his friends and relatives. We're going to go after everything. I think there's a couple of things that they wish to do. And when I say they, I mean there's probably a different level of intensity depending on who you talk to. But the left of the Democrat Party, which is slowly becoming the majority of the Democrat Party, they're in control. Ocasio Cortez and others, they're in control. I think they look at this president and they say he's got to go no matter what. He's just got to go. Mm-hmm. And we will do anything to get him to go. And if we can't successfully get him out of office, let us tie him up, tie his family up. We believe that with this president, and think about everything that the president has done, including that tweet last night where we just said, what the hell's he doing? They believe they can get him off his game. They believe if they go after him hard enough, they will get him off of his game. They believe he will freak out. He will start throwing all sorts of accusations. They will keep this up all the way through the spring and summer of next year. And then they'll bring in Biden. I'm just throwing that out as an example. I may not be Biden. But then they'll bring in Biden. But I do think that is one of their plans. If they can't get him impeached, if they can get something, and I don't even mean a crime. As you know, there are people right now that would go to impeach the president right now based on nothing. Just he's not qualified to be president. We wish to impeach him. I wouldn't be surprised if they took all of this and they wouldn't even try to have an impeachment vote, because an impeachment vote would mean what? During the spring and summer of next year when the president is running, that constantly on TV every night are the allegations against the president. And even if he isn't impeached, the fact is they believe that they have weakened him enough where one of their candidates can win. I truly believe that I believe that they don't think that they can win on any of the issues.
Create the cloud.
Create the cloud and keep the cloud going all the time. Yep. And even if they get impeachment and don't get him out of office, they believe that they will have rattled him so much, he will be so off his game, he'll be a loose cannon, and they'll be able to come in with the Biden or Sanders or whatever.
I think win.
That's what they're thinking.
And if you look at the nature of a Biden, right? We call him milquetoast. I mean, back in the day, he would be, of course, and he is a liberal. But compared to the activist politician who's running on the rest of the stage, he's going to seem milquetoast. But beyond that, you look at the polls that they would likely use if he's still polling high, and the comparison of zero baggage with when you bring in a guy like Joe Biden, there's no baggage. One of the things about, in fact, Barack Obama in 2007 and then 2008 during the actual campaign season was that he was so new, he didn't have a lot of baggage, right? Now, as conservatives, we could break down the ideas of the things that he was saying and campaign stops or in an interview, we could do that. With Biden, there's really no baggage other than the fact that he served under Barack Obama. And for the left, well, that's not much baggage.
And from a few years back to plagiarizing, but nobody.
That's not baggage.
It's not going to go anywhere.
Yeah, because that's nothing. There's zero there compared to the chaos they'll create around Trump to make it look chaotic. And that his entire presidency is nothing but chaos. Let's go back to normal with good old Joe.
I honestly believe that's what their goal is, because of the intensity of them coming out right now and saying we're going up, because there is nobody can still tell you. And a reason I played Paula Reed from CBS News, that's CBS.
Mm-hmm. They're closing the door on the whole Mueller investigation thing.
And she's saying, look, you got Adam Schiff saying all this stuff. There is no basis to this. Mm-hmm. There's no basis to these allegations. What she was stating was Adam Schiff is making this stuff up. He's taking something that's contact and making it collusion. He's making conversation crimes and saying that gives us legitimacy to subpoena these people, to destroy a ton of other people's lives just because we hate this candidate. You are about to see, if you think it's been dirty politics like you've never seen before, wait till the next 6 months.
Oh, the whole Kavanaugh thing will not even come close to comparing to the chaos. It will be that kind of chaos times a million every day, starting this summer. I mean, it's already beginning. They're already setting the table for this. The pace is very clear as to where they're going to go and what they're going to use. Here's what I think they miss. Here's what I think they're discounting. This is a guy, the current president, who as a candidate said, when it came to a POW, I prefer the guys who don't get caught. Who said, I could shoot somebody in the street and you guys would still vote for me. The point being is that he gave himself a lot of, you know, shooting yourself in
self-inflicted the wounds, yes.
Proverbial foot moments. And then you had, I mean, I don't know how many times you want to go off on things that would have. I mean, just changing leadership in your campaign. That is because that's a sign of trouble, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it does not spell or it does not support confidence or it does not bring that kind of confidence from your supporters. So when you go into a 2020, the difference is that now he's got a record of being a president. The things that he's done, the financial economic things that he's done, and if we're on pace, if the tariffs are gone and farming's back to normal, because I do think the farm belt is going to be one of those areas that he's going to go in. He's going to have to go in and repair that damage. That's going to have to happen. They're going to have to feel like. They're going to have the confidence in him and his administration that that's not going to happen again. And he needs those votes. But beyond that, he's going to carry with him, like a lot of incumbents, he's going to carry with him, and I think uniquely to him, things like lowering taxes, things like the economy doing well.
Well, that's why.
And lower regulation.
That's my whole point and why the Democrats, I believe, are going forth with this strategy. Mm-hmm. And that's because they can't argue with him on the substance of the issues.
Right.
So what you make it is the most chaotic. You make it, especially in social media time when people aren't used to anything else, you make this the most chaos you possibly can make it. And then you direct it right back at him saying, well, this is all happening because he's president. If you bring in the normal guy, and that's their only hope. Remember, this you're talking about a Democrat Party that all so far the presidential candidates have accepted a communist solution to our economy and our environment. Mm. Understand what we're dealing with here. Understanding. One of the new leaders of the Democrat Party is somebody who constantly has promoted their anti-Semitism to the point now of this week of stating that when you accuse her of anti-Semitism, you just must have loyalty to a different country and not this country. Hmm. I mean, think about the bizarre opinions that are coming out from the new leadership of this Democrat Party. So I'm not saying it's going to work. I'm simply saying that that's what they believe mm-hmm. is their best way to take the presidency because they can't win on the substance of the actual issues. Their whole goal is to they believe they can get Donald Trump off his game. That's what they believe. And they believe it might have worked during his first campaign. They believe odds are it can't work in the second one. It all depends how the president handles it all. He's been through worse.
Yeah. And it also depends on how the American public sees it. If they see it as crying
yes.
wolf by the Democrats again
right.
and again and again and going after him on nothing and they always come up with nothing. There's a reason CBS is pointing this out. There's a reason that the media last week with the whole Cohen thing said, yeah, that didn't really work well. Because the media knows that they're losing. I believe they know they're losing credibility with the people that are following them, that are reading their work or consuming their work on any level. They need to be more credible. At least there needs to be something there before they make that approach. They can leave it off to the Democrats. Adam Schiff can be Adam Schiff, but we're not going to carry his water for him anymore.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Cold weather can be tough on diesel engines, causing fuel to gel and clog up filters. Stay prepared this winter with the proper fuel additives for your truck. Adding a cold weather additive to your maintenance routine is the easiest way to prevent fuel gelling. Diesel fuel is full of paraffin wax, an element designed to improve your fuel's viscosity and lubrication properties. The lower the temperature outside, the faster the paraffin wax in your fuel will gel up. This can lead to clogged fuel filters or fuel that is too solid to flow. Shop shelves are full of different fuel additives, but the one you need to keep an eye out for is a cold weather additive to help fight fuel gelling this winter. Stop into a TA truck service near you to shop our selection of cold weather additives today.
This report is a service of Shell Rotella.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. So 23 deaths is what we know right now from the terrible tornadoes in southeastern Alabama.
Yeah, Lee County, Alabama. Here in the next couple of hours, as the sun comes up, officials will continue the search for any survivors and also continue to assess the damage there and then continue to advise local residents as to what's going to happen over the next several months. If you think about for those survivors that lost everything, that lost their entire home, being displaced like that, I have no idea what that is like. But certainly it is tragic, very tragic, obviously, for those who lost the family members as well.
Picture they're going to be showing the cell tower that's across that interstate.
Yeah, right.
Just unbelievable.
Yeah, it is.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.